This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Carol Reiberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Do you know that one of the major functions of your brain is to analyze situations and experiences, and then based on the conclusion that it reaches on those situation experiences, actually determines whether you're an optimist or a pessimist? Did you know that you can retrain your brain to interpret even the most negative of situations differently by merely looking for the bright side of things? And did you know that prolonged anxiety and depression can actually alter that optimistic part of the brain? Interesting information. Loved researching this show. The title of the show today, or the topic, is The Essence of Optimism, and really looking at optimism beyond that, just putting on that smiley face that we do in the morning to get through the day, to help us with the challenges. There's so much more to optimism than what meets the eye, and the real determinant of optimistic or pessimistic is your brain. And I want to be talking about that today, and covering about optimism. And then also at the end of the segment of the show, the second segment of the show, I'm going to be talking about some of the things that we can do to retrain the brain. So thanks for joining me. I'm medical intuitive Carol Reiberger. You can tell that things are moving along quickly. It's like this energy that we're in right now, where it's like, okay, let's move it. Let's take action. And that's kind of where the energy of what I woke up to. So when we're going to be talking about optimism, what we really need to do is to really remember that we all have a part of the brain that's optimistic. So I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you. I'm also taking your calls. So if you have a question for me about today's topic, being an optimist, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada, and also international callers. Just dial your international calling code, and then 877-230-3062. I can answer questions around the topic, optimism, also looking at the energy field and sharing my medical intuitive skills with you. You know, I had another reality check this morning as I was going through and putting my day together, and that is OMG. The holidays are just around the corner. And that means that I really need to start looking at shifting my perception from that part where it's optimistic, where we're going to go shopping, we're going to get the things we need, we're going to get it done early. I say this every year. This year, I actually am going to get it done earlier, until I woke up this morning and said, OMG, it's just around the corner, so I need to get moving. Again, action. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to tell you that I have just created a brand new Soulful Connection bracelet. It's called Midnight Beauty. It's beautiful black glass pearls with silver spacers, and of course, the symbolic 13 charms that are a part of the bracelet. It's a half and half bracelet, one half pearls and spacers, and the other half these 13 charms that really are designed symbolically, and the messages and the energetics that is imbued in them when I'm actually in the creation of them to connect you deeper with your soul. So if you'd like to really view the Midnight Beauty bracelet, just go to my homepage, www.ritberger.com. And then what you do is just click on that slide that says Soulful Connection Bracelets, click on it, and it will take you to the page that will not only have Midnight Beauty, it will have all of the other colors that I offer the Soulful Connection bracelet in. I was actually encouraged by the Celestial Helpers to create this bracelet. And again, I always think that everything that I create is for someone else or everyone else, but the reality of it is that the Celestial Helpers, my guides, were basically saying to me, you need to reconnect with your soul at a deeper level. And I was guided to create this bracelet according to the self-mastery programs that were taught in the 12-gate mystery school in Egypt. And each one of these charms symbolizes an aspect of personal mastery and spiritual development in that process of us becoming whole and united and one with the heavens. So our thoughts become the divine thoughts. So it's a very interesting story behind it. In fact, if you do go to the website and you click on that moving slide on the home page, what it'll do is the page that has all the different bracelets that are available, there's an actual audio that has been created to tell the story of how this bracelet came into creation, and then also to share with you what each one of these 13 charms actually symbolize and how they can help you connect deeper with yourself. They make great gifts from the standpoint that it helps deepen your connection with the people that who you love and care about. So again, if you want to know more about the bracelets, just go to www.RitBerger.com. Also, want to encourage you that if you are not in my database to receive my emailings, I encourage you to do so, because I have a lot of specials that I'm going to be offering on my readings in December, and then also some new products that I'm going to be offering. And then I've got a whole lineup of exciting webinars that are going to start in January of 2014. And 2014 is the year of healing on a higher level. So that's going to be the theme of the webinars that I'm going to be featuring throughout the year. And a lot of the guests that I'm going to ask to participate in the webinars themselves on healing on a higher level. And then I do have some very exciting classes that I'm going to be offering. So if you are not on that database, then I encourage you to go into my website, www.RitBerger.com. And then what we will do is you just go down the homepage on the left-hand side, and it says Contact Carol, and submit your name and information there. And even if you've got a show suggestion that you would like me to cover, I just got one the other day that I'm going to be featuring that was on the list, and it happened to come. The woman was very intuitive. It was on the top of the list of the featured topics that I wanted to cover, and she just happened to give me that wonderful gentle nudge to say, okay, well, this is the one that needs to be showcased, and especially the holidays that are coming along with the stress and the adrenal fatigue and all the different things. So it was a perfect timing. If you've got a suggestion, then go to my website, www.RitBerger.com. You know, every single one of us would love to think that we're optimistic in every aspect of our life. And I know I certainly do. And yet it always surprises me, seeing myself as an optimist, when I hit those places that I find that I can't muster up that optimism. And it got me really started thinking about, why can I be optimistic in one part of my life and yet have that pessimism kind of hanging over my head like that little dark cloud in other parts of my life? And as I started thinking about that, that was the premise of wanting to do this show, is that I thought there's got to be something beyond just too darn much in my life or too busy or all the different things that every single one of us has. There's got to be something different that can affect one part of your life so differently than another part of your life, and what causes that part and that perception to repeat itself, whether it's optimistic or pessimistic. So that was the premise of the show. Now, Webster's Dictionary defines optimism as an inclination to put the most favorable construction upon actions and events, or to anticipate the best possible outcome. Well, there's probably every single one of us has that inner desire. We carry the charge of hope. We have the courage. But again, it's to want to seek out and remember and expect those pleasurable experiences and everything in life. However, that doesn't happen in reality. And the reason that it doesn't really goes back to our conditioning as children, and it really occurs in those first 5 years of our life that really start setting the foundation for the parts of our life that we will have a tendency to be optimistic about, and then other areas where pessimism seems to override the situation, even when we see ourselves as optimistic people. So it comes down to the fact that the brain really is the determinant of optimism or pessimism, and it really boils down to one situation at a time in those formable years, and then how not only we responded to those situations, but how other people responded to those situations. So, for example, if we were afraid to do something And we didn't have enough, you know, at that age, we don't have enough information. So fear is something that we live with, and we're fearful about it, and we become chastised about being fearful of doing that, or scolded about doing that. And the emotion that we attach to that particular experience, the brain remembers that. And the brain, as it evolves and develops, isn't as sophisticated as it was when we were young in really discerning the situations down to that finite aspect of them. So what it starts doing very early on, about 13, 14 years old, the brain goes in and starts categorizing things that look like, feel like, get put into those psychological coffers, those little compartments in the brain that basically says that this is not a pleasurable situation. And it gets repeated, it gets supported, the emotions continue to support it. And then what occurs is as we get later in life, we find that we're still having the same pessimism around specific things. And one of the things that I find tremendously in the work I do as a medical intuitive is that we find that that pessimism tends to be most often connected to relationships. Even though our heart would love to be able to find the love of our life and engage in relationships in a very healthy way, those first 5 years of our life really determine our perception and how our brain is going to analyze, compartmentalize, and then repeat those pessimistic or negative emotions attached to relationships. When we meet someone for the first time, everything is exciting. Our brain is so caught up in the moment, the chemistry of it, about that excitement. And then what we find is that in that brief moment, the brain is actually being flooded with endorphins that says to it, this is really good stuff that's going on. And it overrides those underlying memories that are stored around relationships. As we get into the relationship and we become comfortable in the relationship where we get to know someone, even though we don't know everything about them, then the brain immediately goes into that old pattern of compartmentalizing, categorizing, dropping it into the same thing, and it leads us to believe that there is not a perfect relationship, or that if we find it, we're not worthy of a perfect relationship. Or things that I hear all the time is that, you know, everybody has baggage. That certainly is something that can cause us to see relationships from a pessimistic perspective. So it was absolutely fascinating to realize how much of what we're doing in our adult years is really going in and trying to clean out those psychological coffers, but do it in a way that we can feel that we have control of our lives in doing so. That's another thing that I'm going to share. It's interesting that a lot of the cognitive research that's taking place right now, and it's something that's been known forever, it's just that we're actually seeing many more illnesses, the epidemic of diabetes, obesity. We're also seeing a tremendous incline of depression, anxiety disorders. And so what cognitive research right now is showing is that people who tend to suffer from anxiety, or who feel emotionally vulnerable, or who suffer from depression are actually more inclined to be pessimistic by nature. And that doesn't mean that they're doomed to be a pessimist, but what it says is that their brain has created that chemical process and those perceptions and those psychological compartments in their memory to the point where those aspects of the brain are going to tend to analyze situations in a very generalized way to the point where it will support the anxiety, the depression, the pessimism, and so forth. The reason for this is that because our brain actually creates these biases or these judgments about situations and events and even people, then what happens, that brain automatically assumes that all events and all situations that are even slightly remotely appear to be the same from the brain's perspective, is that it entrenches those assumptions by putting them into these, again, mental compartments. The brain actually isn't even aware that the event is different or that there can be different actions that can create different outcomes. And so as a result, the brain isn't, both anatomically and in the physiology of it, it isn't able to see the sunny side or the positive of those particular events. So I went in and thought about that a little bit more, and I thought, you know, we know that this happens very early on in age, but what are these judgments? Let's go in and see if we can actually define what these mental biases are. Well, these mental biases are what direct our thinking on several different levels. The first level of a mental bias or this judgment or these compartments is that the brain only focuses on what we're paying attention to, not what our intentions are from that spiritual, energetic nature, but where is the focus of the mind? What is it paying attention to? Is it paying attention to those little minute details, or is it categorizing a situation in a generalized way to the point where the brain is actually more effective in dealing with it when we get into that generalization, but less effective when we get into that paying attention to the finite or the minute details of what's going on? The second thing that creates those mental biases is how we interpret our experiences. The brain itself sees every situation as merely that. It doesn't go in, the brain itself does not go in and immediately categorize every situation and experience as pleasurable or unpleasurable. It just sees it as an experience. But how it interprets those experiences determines the pattern of emotions that we place on those thoughts, those experiences, or those situations that causes the brain to interpret it in a generalized way. And then the third thing that actually creates those mental biases is that we end up storing what we pay attention to with those emotions in our memory banks. And in the years between birth and five, we are so emotionally vulnerable to the emotions of other people, the expectations associated with it, the emotions that we attach to those expectations or someone else's response, that is, in fact, what comes in and causes us to have those long-term memories around certain situations. And the thing that I found fascinating in reading some of this cognitive research is the things that cause those that pessimistic perspective to develop can be something as insignificant as being maybe 10 years old and having our first love and having some friend say to us, you've got to be kidding, that person is not interested in you. Well, something like that may not even be said out of malice comes in, and all of a sudden we start taking those patterns, that comment, and we go back into our history and we look at that history, that brain categorizes it as not worthy of being loved. That's one of the things, or not enough. There's a couple compartments, actually probably many, but it just drops that right in there. So when our stored memories in those memory banks are actually focused on negativity, then what the brain does is it actually accepts the negativity as the norm, and it negates what's positive because that positive or that being unfamiliar is uncomfortable to it. And what it does is the brain's job is to very quickly analyze, rationalize, determine, compartmentalize. And when it's unfamiliar, the brain immediately negates it. So very simply said, in other words, our brain actually won't engage in what it sees positive if it has been programmed, and programming itself with the emotions has been programmed to only see the negative. That's part of the reason that it's so difficult for us to change mental patterns and to change those mental biases and the beliefs that come out of those mental biases, because the brain is already conditioned that it is going to accept that because it's been repeated over and over and over again. The attention has been on it and the emotions are very similar or the same. It's important to note, and this was something that I found that I really needed to share, is that it's important to note that people aren't born pessimistic or optimistic. A lot of times if we have a, you know, a child and they're a very happy child, we say, well, this is a very optimistic child. Or if we have a child that maybe cries a lot or that seems that it's difficult to be satisfied with things, we'll say, oh, well, my gosh, this child really is pessimistic. And I've heard this from parents, even though as parents we don't want to do that. I've heard this that no, and I've heard parents say, well, no matter what I do, it's never going to be enough. I can give them, you know, everything that they want, and then they always want more. And in the brain, that's actually categorized as pessimism, and it's got a compartment for that, and it just drops it in there and then is supported. So really, we aren't born pessimistic or optimistic. Instead, it's actually a learned behavior that, again, starts as early as when we drop through that birth canal. Some research, cognitive research, is showing that a lot of the different emotional reactions we have are actually brought in the relationship our mother has with her situation. So we have a vulnerability, even when we're in the womb, that we actually will carry a lot of our mother's negativism, some of her pessimism, and then also the negative attitudes that she has or the negative emotions. So when we really look at this, that research shows that it goes way back when we're in the womb. The most current research says that it really happens between birth and 13. So if we go in and we experience those perceptions of life as being unpleasant, then our brain actually conditions itself to accept that all events that are similar to or look like are going to be unpleasant. On the other hand, if our brain was conditioned with pleasant experiences, then it will help it look for the positive aspects of what we experience. And one of the things that I find in the work I do as a medical intuitive, that is a pattern that I consistently find where we have this pessimism or optimism. Now, we, as I said when I started the show, we can be optimistic in certain parts of our lives and pessimistic in other parts of our lives. Well, the area that I found as a medical intuitive that seems to play out this cognitive evidence has to come with food. So say as a baby, you were introduced to foods that you didn't like. And it isn't that you didn't like it. What that means is that you have no foundation in your brain to like or dislike. The texture was maybe uncomfortable in your mouth, or maybe it was the smell, because as babies, our tactile sensations, our taste buds, our smell, all of our five senses are heightened in order to help us survive. So maybe we didn't like the tactile sensation of some of the foods that we ate. Maybe we didn't like the smell of some of the foods that we ate. And then what we would do is that we would be forced to eat these things or just try these things. Well, what happened is that we created a fear and a chemistry change in the body and an emotion. And then if we got scolded because we wouldn't eat the things, or we dumped the bowl or we spit it out or whatever, now the brain has started to categorize eating as being negative, traumatic, having fear, negative emotions. And I find so often as a medical intuitive, when we're dealing with eating disorders or we're dealing with people who are overweight, who try and try and try to lose that weight, I find that very, very deep within their psyche, there is this pessimism about themselves, that they are, whatever they eat is going to be bad. They're going to be bad for eating it. There's going to be guilt. There may be shame that's associated with it. And as a result, they have difficulty allowing themselves to try new foods, to expand their diets, because they're so afraid they're going to do something wrong. And that is going to show up in their lives in a pessimistic way. So eating is a food, and eating is one of the areas that I find this the most. So let's talk about optimists. Well, optimists are people who generally believe that good rather than bad things are going to happen to them. They believe that the future will work out well. They even have a saying that they say, well, it is what it is, and the future will be what it needs to be. But being an optimist doesn't mean being a fatalist, that whatever comes along that you're going to just, you know, accept. But what an optimist does is says that if I change my thoughts and change my perception and change my attitudes and change my emotions, then the future will be a reflection of that positiveness rather than the negative. So what they do is they actually approach life in that action. They have goals, they are very active, and they see that every situation is an opportunity to grow and to learn. May not be pleasant, and that can bring up some of those old memories in the brain, but the optimist is one that says, I will take those unpleasant memories, I will look at them, I will acknowledge them, and then I will do what is needed in order to change them. Optimists also take reality into account. I mean, they aren't Pollyanna. They aren't people who just kind of have these rose-colored glasses on that says everything is going to be fine. They're very realistic, and they take that reality into account. But they do everything that they can in their words, actions, and deeds to change that reality so it ends up as a favorable, pleasant result. They tend to have an entirely different explanation of things. Rather than focusing on problems, they actually focus on solutions. And in my world of personality, what I have found is that in the world of personality, due to the neurology of the brain associated with that personality color, that certain personalities tend by nature to focus on the problem, and then other personalities tend to focus on solutions. And that very difference right there, the people who, personalities who focus on the problem have a higher predisposition to be pessimistic in more areas of their life. People who tend to be problem solvers or see a problem in a clear way and take the time to see the problem, acknowledge it, and work through it and come up with some different solutions, by nature tends to be more optimistic in how they approach life. And there's things I'm going to share in the next segment that we can all do, whether we're neurologically by personality programmed that way or not, is that we can change. So some of the common characteristics of optimists are they see the good in all situations, even when it is the most difficult. Now, one of the things that we hear is a common cliche that's used is that there's got to be a silver lining in everything. There's got to be a lesson in everything that experiences. Those two phrases right there actually do tell the brain and trigger the parts of the brain in the memory bank of those pleasant situations and bring the chemistry forward in the brain that supports that there are wonderful opportunities in even what's most difficult, and there's lessons in everything that can, that happens to us. When I was doing this research, I came across a very interesting, research project that was done around, with a family, several families, and they had children. One appeared to be an optimist, one appeared to be a pessimist. And so part of the research was, is the child that was pessimistic, that they gave this child all of these different wonderful toys that were new, that were exciting. And then the optimistic child, they actually gave, seriously, they gave a pile of manure. And when I first read that, I thought, oh, well, that has to be a typo in there somewhere. But what they found is that in the pattern of the brain and the perceptions associated with it, that even the child that tends to be pessimistic, that believes that everything is never going to go the way they want it to, even when they had all of these toys and everything, they were unhappy. They found that the toys were wrong. The toys either broke too quickly, but all they did was keep looking at that negative aspect. Now, the children that had the pile of manure became very creative in that research project. And what they did is they actually started taking that manure apart, honestly, and going in, and that old cliche, there must be a pony in the pile somewhere. That's where that cliche really became very well founded, that children who tend to have a more positive, pleasant perspective on situations, even when they were given something that was smelly and unpleasant, were able to find something pleasant in the situation. Another characteristic of an optimist is they truly expect things to go their way. And when they do that, they drive events and experiences to the outcomes they desire. They also see the events in their life as very controllable. They don't feel defeated when something goes wrong. Instead, they create an action plan. They follow it, and they work quickly to eliminate any problems that arise. The other thing is with an optimist is they don't give up and they don't tend to blame other people. They're realistic when other people are involved, but they don't blame other people for what happens to them. And then they also don't what we call in the psychological world catastrophize or awfulize the situation. Again, they just see that the situation is merely an opportunity to see new options, to try new things, to make different choices, and then to be in control of the outcome. Well, what I'd like to do is I do want to tell you that I am going to be taking your calls, 877-230-3062. So if you have a question for me, please call that number. Right now I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to be right back, and I'm going to be talking more about optimism, the essence of it, and what we can do to actually retrain the brain in a positive way to become optimistic, even in the parts of our life where pessimism prevails. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month, she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing. What color is your personality? Red, orange, yellow, or green? Now at Reitberger.com, Dr. Carol Reitberger, an international leader in the field of personality psychology, brings you everything you need to know about your personality. With Carol's innovative insights and personality assessment, you can finally live the life you desire, create more satisfying relationships, enjoy better health, and much more. So act now. Discover your personality color and find out about the personality colors of the people in your life, all at Reitberger.com. What you learn will change your life forever.
Well, welcome back. If you're just joining me, the topic of today's show is on optimism, and I'm talking about optimism from really the neurology of the brain, the conditioning from when we, from birth to 5 years old, those real informative, emotionally vulnerable years that we experience in our lifetime. It's what I found is a medical intuitive. So often what we experience in that birth to five and then from 5 to 13, those are the things that we spend the rest of our life trying to either identify, figure out what to do, and to change and to let go. So it's just, it's a fascinating process. So I'm going to continue talking about the connection between optimism and health, and then also sharing some of the things that you can do to help retrain your brain to be optimistic in situations and to let go a lot of those old memories that have that pessimism or those negative emotions associated with it. I'm also taking your calls. So if you have a question for me about your health or about the topic today, you can call me at 877-230-3062, and then international callers, dial your calling code and then 877-230-3062. I also wanted to let you know I have a brand new look on my homepage. So go in, and if you haven't been visiting for a while, please do go check out www.reitberger.com. We've kind of classed up that front page, and we've got some moving slides and very colorful, a lot of activity and movement on it, and a very easy way for you to learn some of the things that I have done and that I'm offering for purchase. And one of those things is that I did a animal companion webinar with Danielle McKinnon, a very well-known and world-renowned animal communicator and psychic medium, on the soul contracts that we have with our animal friends and how those soul contracts with them are actually created as a part of the pre-birth agreements that we make with others, including animals, whether there are pets or animals that seem to come through in our animal totems, that we actually created these soul contracts with animals in that time prior to us coming on this earth. Fascinating topic. And then Danielle really goes in and talks about what those soul contracts are and how an animal will actually take on a lot of the different behavior of the human to be able to mirror that behavior back to their human, to be able to have them see that, oh, this is what's going on. Also about the healing qualities of animals, and then also what a healthy soul contract with an animal looks like, and then what an unhealthy soul contract looks like. So very interesting. It is available for purchase. If you're interested in learning more about it, just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. Click on the moving slide at the top, part of that brand new banner that I have on Animal Companions. Click on it. You can read about it. Then you can purchase it right online. It's only $14.95. It's a 90-minute webinar. And then what you can do is immediately download it to where you can start listening to this relationship that your animal has with you. So we're talking about optimism. And, you know, I talked about the brain in the first segment and how it plays an important role in the that determining whether situations and events are positive or negative. But what I found is we have to really look at brain chemistry. So if we go back to that birth time between birth and five, and we find where we're most emotionally vulnerable, then what the brain is going to do is it's going to respond most strongly to fear and to the reaction of other people, the negativity, anger, shouting, the loud voices or anything. So the chemistry of the brain that is associated with pessimism tends to have that underlying chemistry that's associated with fear, that's associated with fight, flight, freeze. So if the child had an actual impressionable time where there was a lot of fear and there was a lot of loud shouting or there was the display of anger, then that child psychologically is going to create a bigger category box in their memory banks around that pessimism or the negativity of the experience. Anytime that human, as they evolve, and when I say human, child, puberty, adolescent, adult, experiences fear, that brain generalizes that fear as being a part of this pessimism. The events and situation may have been very, very different that created this fear, but the brain does not go into that finite discernment to see, is it truly, does it truly belong in that negativism, or does it go into that other category of being positive and pleasurable? So again, when we look at that, is that when you find yourself, and this is how I went in and I was doing when I was doing this research, where we can be optimistic in one part of our life and pessimistic in another, is to go in and look at first your reaction to the situation. If the underlying emotion of that situation is fear, then you will most likely, not all the time, but most likely, categorically, see that situation from a pessimistic standpoint. When you don't get that fight, flight, freeze in the dynamics of the hormones of the body, and you don't experience the fear, then the brain will automatically go in and categorize that experience in the optimistic or the pleasant category in the brain itself. And while we have tremendous memory banks that are stored in that deep psychological coffers of who we are, what determines where those memories or those experiences or what memories are brought up and what experience is going to be placed there determines whether you have more pessimism or more optimism in life itself, and how those emotions, negative, sadness, fear, disappointment, anger, resentment, guilt, shame, disappointment, all of those things will tend to go into the categories in the memory of the brain as being pessimistic or having negative. Hope, courage, love, joy, all of those things, peace, bliss, all of those things will, when you do something that makes you feel good about yourself, then it automatically goes into those optimistic categories. There is a growing body of evidence that shows that optimism actually is supercharged by a positive outlook on life. And so when I say that, is that in that memory bank that says optimistic, is that each time we do something that feels good or creates a positive emotional response, it actually supercharges that memory bank of optimism. And what it does is it actually changes the perception that we have of the situation, especially if it's difficult. We see it as, oh, there's lessons that can be learned. So what we know from this field of psychoneuroimmunology is that when we have a positive outlook on life and we see that each situation is an opportunity to grow and to learn, that it not only keeps us healthy, but it really has a positive aspect on preventing specific illnesses such as heart disease, diabetes, and it has a tremendous impact on the healing of cancer itself. Being optimistic is like a powerful visualization that tells the brain all is well. It keeps a person from getting sick in the first place. It also influences and quickens the healing process. It impacts the immune system ability to fight infection. And we also know that it actually increases longevity. So people who tend to have more in their optimistic banks, memory banks, than pessimistic, or who have changed pessimism into optimism, we have found in this research, will tend to live anywhere from 5 to 8 years longer than people who are by nature pessimistic. Now, I believe as a medical intuitive and working with people, I believe those numbers are very conservative. I believe that optimism is something that we can develop at any age. We have to maybe retrain the brain. I'm going to talk about that, but that we can become optimists on many, many, many different levels in our life and how our brain analyzes and discerns things, and that we can even live longer and maybe even into our 100 years old. In fact, there was an interesting interview the other day with a veteran in Veterans Day who is 107 years old. And the first question everybody asks is that what do you, because you've been through World War II, you've certainly seen all these horrific things that happened, is that what about it helped you live as long as you did and not impact your health? And the first thing that he said is that he has a glass of whiskey every morning when he wakes up. Well, oh my gosh, my first thing as a medical intuitive is you've got to be kidding me. And, of course, I immediately went into the fact that, don't you know that alcohol has blah, 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 blah. I found my brain going there, and I thought, you know what? It doesn't bother him that he does this. This is what he does. And it made him happy, obviously. So what happened is that was a part of the thing. And he says, and every so often I indulged in a cigar. And, of course, that part of me came in and go, oh, my gosh, don't you know, smoke, blah, blah, blah. And it made me become very aware. I was absolutely in awe of his age. But what I was really aware of is how I had become so biased in my mental observation of certain things that I really did find myself judging myself and others from the standpoint of that pessimism. It's like, oh my gosh, don't you know you shouldn't be doing that? And it was like, you know what? Accept things for what they are, Carol. If this works for this person and it gives them that joy that he's looking for, my gosh, he's 107 years old. You can learn a lot from it. Something as simple as that shift of perception can actually release those negative emotions, and it starts to chip away at that box of pessimism in the brain. And then what we do is we stop becoming as judgmental first of all, on ourselves, because that's really what I was doing, and then judgmental on others. So optimism has a lot of health benefits to it, and what it can do is it can help us live a longer, fuller, richer, happier, more joyful life if we are willing to look at each situation differently. Before I go ahead and wrap up, I'd like to go ahead. Let's take Carrie from Connecticut. Hi, sweetie. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Hi, honey. We're just prompting you all over everywhere. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How can I help you?
Well, this is the first time I'm listening, and a friend suggested I listen, and I'm calling with a health concern.
All right. So, and how can I help you with that?
Well, I have had depression for as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
And a year and a half ago, I got Lyme disease. And so it was pretty tumultuous before Lyme disease, but since then has been quite a ride. And I got bit again last week by a tick, so I'm back in. I'm sick again, pretty sick
okay.
again.
Right, right.
I'm feeling a little emotional.
You will, sweet. This is fearful.
So there's a lot of fear, and I feel like I've tried so hard to do everything to get well and get better, but there's something I'm just not getting. I mean, I got bit again. There's something I'm not hearing that I'm not letting myself hear. This,
well,
you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I think I have this great potential to be a really joyful person, but I can't get to it.
Okay, so let's jump in and do that. And first of all, I would like to acknowledge that the depression is actually genetic. I can pick it up on your mother's side. So what that means to me to say to you, sweetie, is that in the dynamics of your DNA and of your functionality of your brain and your body, mm-hmm. there is going to be a natural tendency for there to be an instability.
Uh-huh.
And what that means is it doesn't mean you're doomed to be depressed, but it is very, one of the things I found as a medical intuitive is that if we say, okay, this is genetic, I can accept that it's genetic. If we can accept that, then we can work toward getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
When we don't recognize what triggers that depression and we can't find a pattern in our life that supports it, then we start spinning. Now we get fearful. When mm-hmm. we get fearful, then we go in that fight, flight, freeze, and the chemistry of the brain locks us down.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, it's genetic. Work with it as being genetic. If you find at times that you need help to be able to deal with it, then just give yourself the permission, the love, whatever you need, and just deal with it. It's an actual chemistry of the body. The Lyme disease itself, what it does is that in the secretion that basically is secreted into the blood to thin it so the tick can get what it needs. It's all about the tick. And that spirochete, and what it does is it wreaks havoc with the immune system. And the immune system, because the spirochete is very almost invisible. And it's not invisible in what it does with the body, but the immune system has a difficult time finding it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've had Lyme before, then when your immune system just assumes that anytime you feel bad, it's due to the Lyme disease. So your immune system immediately goes in and it almost honestly accepts that, oh, we've been here before, we've had this before, and it doesn't fall into the kind of that activity that's needed in order to give your body the support it needs.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you've been just recently bit again, your immune system, very honestly, sweetie, is going to go. It's not going to recognize that you were bit again. Your brain isn't going to recognize you were bit again. All it's going to do is your brain is going to find your body going, oh, my gosh, it's back. It's back.
It and never went away. I've been
exactly.
sick the whole year and a half still from
Absolutely.
The old bite.
So what's happened is that your brain has normalized Lyme. Your immune system has actually normalized Lyme.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is the fact that you were bit again, neither your brain or your immune system really even connects with the fact that you were. So
uh-huh.
Having said that, the most important thing that you can do since you were bit again is that you can go in and start taking the steps that are needed. This is about gaining control, and it's about gaining control in a very small segment. You don't have to gain control on depression or all of it. Very small segment. Are you on antibiotics?
No.
Okay. Are you open to taking antibiotics?
Yeah, I'm open, but I have actually have a doctor that I really love, and she does I guess you could call it alternative protocol. It's a Dr. Klinghart who...
Okay, I'm aware of Dr. Klinghart.
Yeah,
okay.
So I use his protocols and his energy testing.
Okay, may I, because I would be remiss if I did not do this, could I please ask you to be open that if this does not respond as quickly as it did to that protocol, that you would at least explore taking an antibiotic regimen for only a short period of time, because what it will do is it will give your immune system that support it needs in order for it to get a jump on what your body's experiencing right now. Now, that's not saying doing it. It's like taking and working with that kind of negativity and that fear and saying, there are other options. Use your one you've got. Go for it. It works for you. It worked for you before. But the fact that this is here, just stay open, honey.
Oh, no, I am open. I've taken antibiotics before. Yeah. It's just that she's told me that, and I even, you know, yesterday in my appointment, she said, if we give you the antibiotics now, your immune system can't mount the response because it's not even, it's barely chugging along as it is, so it's not going to be able to use the antibiotic, you know, as a foothold like it would normally.
Okay.
That's how she explains it to me, and she said that she explains it that it would be pointless. I'm open to anything, trust me.
Right.
Anything.
Okay, so in that particular case, continue the dialogue with her and use the protocol to be able to support it. And if you do find that you do need to go on antibiotics, again, it doesn't need to be a long time. Uh-huh. It will just support what is going on. All we're trying to do, honestly, is to give your brain enough options to where it'll stop awfulizing.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to her, conversations, information. The best thing you can get is information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be able to help you with that. I want to tell you that even though you told me that you were just recently bit, I'm not picking up that this has thrown you over the edge. I believe you're still dealing with it the way it has been. I think that this is, from appearance, seems to be a blip. It's like an OMG that happened again. But your immune system is still chunking along as if it was before. So it feels to me that the antibiotics, should you decide that it's needed, and through the doctor you're working with, decide it's needed, won't be very long, short time, just a quick boost, like a booster shot.
Okay.
And then what that will do is it will help you.
Okay.
But this doesn't feel, honestly, to me, as catastrophic as I know it does to you, and I don't mean to minimize that because of the fear associated with it. And the other thing is that the metaphor that I get for all of this is that, and I say it with love, sweet, get in your body, is that, and what I mean by that is you're in control of so many different parts of your life. Be in control of your body. Tell your body what you want it to do. You want it to heal. When you go outside and if you were to get bit again, heaven help us, but if you did again, it's not about, oh my God, what did I do wrong? It's about, what can I do differently next time?
Okay.
It's about control. It's about you speaking up. It's about control. It's about you feeling in control. That helps you with depression. When you do things to help you with depression, your depression isn't as bad. When you do things with the Lyme and you know that you're doing the things that are right for you in your body, then the Lyme doesn't have the hold on you.
Right.
And that's really what this whole underlying thing is. It's about control, and then it's about trusting yourself.
Okay.
Pretty cool. I understand the fear part of it, but oh my gosh, you've come so far in this that it really, really does have a lot of, it's not as bad as you think it's going to be, and your brain does, sweetie. Honestly.
Okay. Can I ask you one one more piece?
I've got about a...
Okay.
Oh my gosh, I've got to go. Oh my gosh, I've got to go.
Okay.
I love you. Thank you, sweetie. Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I cannot believe how these shows just go on and on and on, and they just poof, gone. So what I want to do is I want to thank you for joining me today about optimism. So what is that one last thing that you can do to become an optimist is stop generalizing situations and don't focus on specific failures. Instead of see yourself as an opportunist and an optimist to be able to change what it is to what you would like it to be. Light and love to all of you. It's been wonderful sharing this time with you. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you next week on the radio.
You've been listening to the Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.reiberger.com. See you soon.